Ocho, episode number 217. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me, and we brought him back. Oscar Willis from the Mac Life is here as well.
Thank you very much.
Had so much fun last week. I don't remember all of last week, but I think we had a good time.
Yeah, the feedback was mixed. Mostly positive, but also you guys was talking just a lot of shit about beer. That's true.
Courtesy of Latchkey Brewing.
Yeah.
My wife made me promise to take Ubers the next time we do a Latchkey Brewing sponsored episode. So I have agreed. I'll take an Uber next time out. But all right, we're here at the Casa de Cold Coffee. We're still having a couple frosty beverages. We just might not have as many as we did last week. Mm-hmm. Just on the wise advice.
Yes.
Of those that love us. it is a. By the way, this got to kind of remind you back home, Oscar. This weather. This is not May Las Vegas weather. This is some European type May weather.
It is cloudy, overcast, nice breeze coming from the southwest. But there's still a swimming pool outside, so it's not quite the same.
That's
but,
true.
You know. But yeah, it's.
Dip your toes in that. You know, it's not warm.
Okay, fair enough. But I have to say, I don't hate it because every time I get into my car, the first 10 minutes is not me crying and sweating. So it's good.
That's my wife was complaining that it's too cold. I'm like, babe, we got plenty of 110 degree days coming.
Yeah,
let's just enjoy this while we can.
That's it. I'll take 70 weather, which is, I think what it says we're about right about now is about 68 or 70, which... I
gorgeous.
Love it because I always run hot. So this weather right now is absolutely amazing,
as evident by the air conditioning in every hotel room you've ever been in.
Oh man,
i.e. meat locker.
Cold coffee does turn the AC down as low as it will
it
go.
It can never go low enough.
Oh my god,
it's cold crazy. Coffee.
Yeah, I do have to wear a jacket when I go to work and collaborate in his hotel room. Yeah. All right, Cole Coffee, you've been doing some projects. I didn't even know you were. Even know you were doing some behind the scenes stuff. I wanted to see if you could. Kind of, is it secret project?
No. I mean, actually, I was starting to work on the piece, and I might release something. But I mean, I think I've talked with you about before is like the latest version, season 3, if you will, of Wimp to Warrior is going on with Jesse Jess up at Extreme, a gym that you're at all the time.
Sure.
So I went there, and the whole premise is to sort of just follow along as the season goes, and hopefully just hear. The stories from a couple of the participants or a few as it's kind of going and just kind of bring that. So yeah, I went and it's painful because the class starts at 7 in the morning.
Ugh.
So I've been getting up at like 6 in the morning, which normally my shift doesn't start to about 9. I do that 9 to 5 thing. So I roll out of bed at like 8:30 and like, it's been brutal. But you know, it's been really fun actually going, you know, because these are not professional fighters. You know, when you show up with a camera, most of them want to just sort of like be a little shy and just sort of smile. And the last thing they want to do is like you're dying on the ground, sweaty, and somebody sticking a camera near your face. Like a lot of people could just be really put off by it, but they've been actually pretty good. And that was kind of one of the things I talked to some of them afterwards because I got some little testimonials. So what I'm going to try to do is just sort of piece – you know, a thing sort of having Jess and them sort of set up what Wimp to Warrior is. And if you guys don't know what it is, it's a fitness thing that you can do. But it also, if you want it to, it can culminate into a fight.
It's basically like a full
fight.
MMA training camp, right? Like several months.
Yeah, it's
I was actually looking at this one to do it, but then I just...
Really?
I carried on living my life, and I never did. Yeah. But
and it's not.
But I thought about
it. It's not cheap. I forget what the price is.
It's a grand.
It's like
$1,000
for the whole season. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
That
makes sense because
you're paying you
get
professional
months of professional training. I mean, grappling,
and at
striking.
A gym. It might as well be. I mean, I know that they did say that they had some passes so that if some of the participants wanted to come to, like, say, a grappling class, because today they were working on the wrestling and grappling. So if you wanted to. They might work it out to where
I think
you could
like
go.
Three but, tiers, but if you want the full experience, it's like $1,000.
But it allows you to at least be in this gym, and you're getting trained by professional athletes.
Yeah.
And it literally is about an hour to an hour and a half each of these sessions.
Oh wow! So and then I guess at the conclusion of it, you can make the decision. You don't have to fight if you don't want
and
to. But a lot
every single person that is doing it right now, I think there were like 13 when they started, and I think there's maybe around 12 to 13 still in it. Every single one is going to fight.
Says they want to fight. So
when do they start hard sparring? And then
they're starting to do some of that, but hard, I think, is probably another few weeks or so out.
See if some minds are
changing
at that point.
They're starting to actually, because even when Max, the coach that was doing the grappling today, was like, hey, next time we do this, you know, bring – some MMA gloves because we want to have you start to actually start to work and when you're holding mounts.
That's Max Roshkoff.
To actually start hitting them. I think that's what his last name is.
He fights at FFC as well. But
yes, that's the guy.
Here's the thing that's cool. So I know Richard Hunter's doing it again, right? Our good friend Richard Hunter.
Yes, for a second time.
He's doing it again. But
and then there's another girl that's doing it for a second time.
What they're doing on this one is the fights that they're going to have are actually going to be at a tough enough event.
At a tough enough event.
So they're going to do it at a tough enough, and it'll be like a normal amateur fight and then a Wimp to Warrior fight and then a normal amateur fight and then a Wimp to Warrior.
Or they might just do like the Wimp to Warriors at the beginning and then
do it or something. The adrenaline dumps on that night.
It's going to be insane.
It should be pretty intense.
So it's cool. So you're documenting, kind of making like a little
documentary
sort of
like a little documenting, but just like a little series. I think for our site and a lot of the sites, I mean, we have so many pre-fight interviews, post-fight interviews, and a lot of just fight week cover. I thought it'd be kind of fun just to do something that's a little bit outside of it, but also hopefully trying to create something that people will want to follow somebody's story. So hopefully if some of these characters kind of stand out, and I've already started identifying even in my mind some of the ones that have shown some personalities that are kind of fun, but also have a lot of work to do, but also can be fun. Like, there's one guy, he's
600 pounds.
And I like the guy. You know, he was like 350, 360. His name's JR. But he's got a hilarious personality, and you could tell the class sort of gravitates to him. But the guy wants to, by the end of it, by the end of the thing, he wants to be down by like 280 or under 300 pounds, which is a lot of work. But, you know, it's interesting. He's like, before they were doing this thing called shrimping, where you're actually, kind of sliding with your hips on the mat, and you can do it backwards and you can do it forward. And it looks at it and you're like, oh, it doesn't look like that would be that hard to do, but it's actually very, very hard and awkward. Yeah. He said when he first started, he's like, I couldn't even do it. And already now he's starting to – he's like when he was doing it today, he was like, holy shit, I'm shrimping. He's like, I'm doing it, So as they're going along – and I tried to tell him, I was like, dude, that's the shit that's awesome. Like, that's the stuff people want to hear. Yeah. So, hopefully it'll be something fun to where, we put it out there and just something different than what we're normally doing. But hopefully people
and
want to do it.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see you. It's going to be fun. I'm excited to see you put it together. Yeah. And how crazy is that for them? I mean, for these people who didn't – I'm sure when they signed up, never thought in a million years there'd be a camera on them.
They're getting their training right now. They're getting interview training. Yeah.
But that's cool because it's like they have – they can go back and watch a documentary of their own performance. That's
which is
pretty cool.
Which is what it is. And I told some of the guys, the ones that stayed after I did some interviews, and I was like, and I just tried to tell them, I was like, I want you to see me not as a threat, not as a whatever, trust that when I'm showing you in a moment, and this is like one of those things that you have to have a relationship, and this is one of those things I hope all fighters understand as well. If I'm there documenting it, I'm not shooting you at your lowest moment in the hopes of trying to show your low moment. But when you take it in the full scale of where you see where you're going, you're going to look back at these moments and be like, wow, that was awesome. I see where I was. I was struggling there. And look where you get at some point. Yeah. So, if I'm there on the fly on the wall and if I'm doing whatever, don't feel like I'm shooting you like, God, here I am, a guy that maybe had issues grappling with my weight, and now there's a guy in front of me with the camera like, oh, he's gonna make me look like I'm fat and he's gonna whatever.
Right.
Like, that's not why
you're not
I'm
gonna
here
have a voiceover
this.
Like, look at this huge
look at this fat
like, what is this guy
like
think?
That's not
the
what
whale
about.
Comes again.
Yeah. And that's a tough thing because they don't know me. They don't know me from anybody else. So they've never seen any of my past work. So I could see where there is that possibility because somebody could come and do that.
Yeah.
If I secretly work for TMZ, I could be like, here, look at this latest fat fucks try to do MMA,
That's the
or
headline.
Whatever. And that's the thing, but. That's not what it is. But, ultimately it's about trying to make a people story. I hope that we can find some characters that people just want to follow along with. And in it, these people are finding their strength in themselves to do something better. And I think all of us, if we see those sort of things, it's the kind of stuff that we're all like, well, fuck, what can I do better today?
Yeah.
If we had who's our coach, our favorite coach? 1%. If we could just be 1% better every day. Used to have the gym right over here. Teach us high school
Lundell,
wrestling.
Oh, Ricky Lundell.
Ricky Lundell. Yeah. Like that sort of stuff. If people can look at these little things and find motivation to just be a little bit better and do something else, that's ultimately what it is. So I hope it works out.
I'm excited to see it.
It's good. Yeah. It's great. And right now it's in my head and I'm just starting to put together. So I hope it comes up because I want to do justice for the people that are letting me come document this stuff.
Yeah.
And, I want to create something that's just fun for the site. So, but
that's cool.
Ultimately
what it is. Well, that'll be on MMA Junkie.
Yeah.
So
I was hoping to pick up an interview with Anders, too. But he didn't show up. He didn't show up. It was weird because, yeah, I caught him last time. And, you know, when I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll get you next week. I should, if I knew I wasn't going to get him, I would have asked him. But I would have rather have had time to prep. You know, he's in an interesting position, you know, now with, what, 4 losses in a row. You know, I know his back against the wall. So I was hoping to catch up with him, but didn't get to do that. And then Jesse, you know, was going to get an update on her, but nothing really has changed.
Right.
I mean, besides the fact that she's got her cast off now, she's in a fracture boot. She's still a few weeks out before she can actually start training again. There's nobody on the book. So I was like, well, we don't need an update to really say that sort of stuff.
We'll
wait till something happens. But she did tell me, and this is one of the things I was telling you earlier when we were chatting online, is working with a new gym here in town, and the name escapes me, but they have some Muay Thai fighters and some people that have done some amateur stuff, but they actually are opening up another gym here in town that she's been able to teach and stuff.
That's
so
cool.
They're going to build and add some MMA stuff on that, so they're still fitting it out inside the building, but once that goes, so hopefully then we will have an update from her. So
very cool.
Yeah, so
by the
cool.
way, keep your eyes, remember the name Max Rushkoff. That guy's talented, man. He's going to...
He seemed like a sharp guy.
He's real sharp.
Yeah, and even some of the stuff he was telling you, he was like, you know, I'm showing you these moves and some of these things, and I liked it when his downward sort of pressure, you know, and forward pressure of how he was dealing with people on the ground. He's like, a lot of fighters want to get on their knees when somebody pulls them into their guard. So he was really starting to train them about not finding yourself on the ground. Find a way to get up on your feet, and they're using the stance by putting one hand on the hip, the other one sort of on a knee, so that you could be able to strike and do this other stuff. And some of the things he was trying to explain to him, he's like, this is stuff that current fighters aren't doing right now. A lot of fighters are more than willing to just stay on their knees, try to posture up a little bit and throw punches. He's like, I want you to break that habit before you ever get into it. He's like, a lot of fighters already have this. He's like, so what I'm trying to teach you is some new stuff that hopefully more people do. So nice. I was like, oh, it was cool.
He's a smart kid,
to do
man.
It. Yeah.
He's a smart kid. He's talented too, man. I think he's going to be somebody in the sport, man. I really do. I'm excited to watch some more of his fights. All right, listen, it was a fairly busy weekend of MMA, but I think the one thing that – the story I think is got the most traction coming out of it, really – is Sage Northcutt. You know, I feel like that's the one that people are talking about the most. And I kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on it because I've seen some people, even some people behind the scenes, saying that he should call it a career, you know, and that this is the type of devastating injury that you don't want to deal with and that maybe he should be ready to hang it up. There's so much aspect of this because, I mean, look, what happened to him can happen to anybody, right? But here's a couple of things that I think have really come out of it is A, the debate over whether one – did the right thing with them or did the wrong thing with them, right? Like, is you know, was this good matchmaking or was it stupid to potentially bring in your high-priced free agent to lose? And the other one that's really, I think, getting some discussion and maybe needs more is this whole weight-cutting situation. Yeah. I mean, the hey, we do hydration tests, we fixed weight-cutting, and then I don't know if you guys saw the interview. I happened to be watching it. Uriah Faber was talking to Luke Thomas and was like, dude, there were definitely people cutting weight, you know? So I don't know. There's so many aspects of it to tackle of it. What stands out to you the most?
Well, first of all, the thing with Sage, like it was, like you said, it's not like his face was meant to explode. You know, it was a knockout punch. It was a good punch that knocked him out. But it is a freak injury, essentially.
Right.
Like, and I mean, if he did call it quits, I don't know how you could blame him because I can't imagine. Similar to when Anderson broke his leg, I can't imagine going in there and getting jabbed in the face and being like, oh, you know, how you could ever be.
That's right. The mental scare of
it
going forward.
Secondly, I think everyone's like, oh, he should call it quits. Well, he's 23, right?
That's crazy.
I know. I think it's like what people think is he came on with all this hype and the way he looks. It's like people were like, he's either going to be a future champion or he's bust. And there's loads of people in this sport who don't become champion.
Right.
He's allowed to not. You know, he's allowed to be a prospect and then be like a middle of the road fighter.
Sure.
It's like just because he had all this spotlight on him right away, it's like it's
you can put on entertaining fights. You can be somebody that want to watch and not be a champion.
You know, I do.
I mean, if Cowboy Cerrone, let's say for whatever reason, you know, this title run that he's on right now, it doesn't end in a belt. Or are we gonna at the end of his career go, what a waste that was?
But even like names like Ross Pearson,
sure,
was in the game for, he's a like a journeyman essentially, still absolutely commendable career and stuff like that, right? So what I do think is I don't think Sage is going to be the world-class elite guy that people thought he could be because of his look. I think it definitely showed, like, his karate stuff and his karate style. It looks cool. I don't know how really super effective it is, to be honest. So As far as I know, he doesn't need to retire. I mean, if he wants to, I get it. And especially, like, as soon as the guy gets a really major film role, he's gone anyway, to be honest. Like,
true.
Not that I know his inside of his head, I'm just assuming.
If you could get paid, if you get paid lots of money for not getting punched in the face, it's probably not a hard decision to make.
So, thank you very much, sir. I'll take that money and go.
Also, I wonder if he wasn't so bloody pretty, if people wouldn't be like, oh, he should walk away. Like, if he was a bit uglier, do you think people would be like, oh, no? You know, I think it's only because he's
probably
a really,
just tell him to
what else has he got going for him?
It's only because he's
do?
Like a cherubly beautiful young man that everyone's like, oh, don't let him get hurt.
So true.
But, so that's it. I don't think he should retire. But as far as the bigger issue here, like the one matchmaking stuff, I didn't really hear a lot of people predicting Sage was going to win before the fight.
Right.
And then when it started, it was pretty obvious he wasn't going to win. Like, it just seemed like.
Yeah.
I don't know. You don't want to like cast aspersion and stuff, but one championship do stuff that I think should raise an eyebrow of a lot of people watching. You know, they make a few claims about viewership and stuff like that. And there's two different tactics you can use as promoters. When you get the chance of hiring a free agent from the UFC, you can either bring them in like Bellator do and give them very favorable matchups and try and use them as a star to focus your brand around from now on. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't work. I think actually Bellator's had a bit of an unlucky streak with that, really. And then an alternative pattern you could do is bring someone on and put them in a very tough fight. And if your guy wins, you can say, well, look, we have some bad motherfuckers out here too.
Yeah.
So there's two ways of looking at it. I'm not accusing one of like setting them up for a fall, but I don't think one are putting these guys in like tailored fights that we perhaps thought they were going to.
And I don't have a problem. I'm kind of glad they're not. I mean, listen, we're definitely talking. I mean, they have gotten their money's worth out of these free agents. But you know what's interesting is I feel like a hell of a lot more people have talked about Eddie Alvarez and now Sage Northcutt versus Demetrius Johnson. Like, Demetrius just did what Demetrius was supposed to do. Right. And by the way, if you didn't watch that fight, Demetrius did not have an easy fight, man.
Yeah.
He was tested as well. So to me, like, I kind of commend one for doing this. I think to me, it's honestly smarter than just the I've got the former UFC guy that goes and beats everybody.
I agree, but I do have one caveat, is that I would actually say this is the better tactic to promote your brand, to suggest we are rivals and these guys are tough.
Yep.
But I will say, at least over in this side of the world, I think more people are talking about how bad / ugly Sage and Eddie looked as opposed to the winners of the names of the winners. You
That's
know,
true.
So it's kind of like,
do you even remember the name of the guy they lost to?
I definitely don't.
Yeah.
But I think like so that's the only downside of it. But I do think. Perhaps it's very hard for us as well because they're always talking about their Eastern audience being very different than ours. I don't know how the Eastern audience received that. Maybe they're going, you know, wow, one's crazy and really good. And then in that case, it's a home run for one. Like, that's what they want to do, right? Promote themselves as the alternative big show out there. Yep. Also, Deadspin calling them a minor league is stupid as well.
That was bad.
That's not what you're talking about. But yeah, so I think it's just an interesting thing. Like, and also, the other downside is, it's not necessarily promoting the winner of the fight, but it's also now what do you do with them?
Right.
Now you've given them that loss. Not that they're trying, but now Eddie's
now
lost.
Now where do you go?
Like, Sage, you know, he's supposed to be Ken from Street Fighter.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, that's that kid who got his face smashed in, you know. 9 hours of surgery.
That's
like,
crazy, man.
It's crazy.
I feel bad for him. Yeah,
I feel really bad for the guy. Like, it's a young kid, 23, handsome as a motherfucker, you know.
Still got the thumbs up, even with the bruises and everything. He's healing from
the
surgery.
Can you imagine if they took
the apparatus
and they took off the bandages and he's hideous and he just grows a beard and becomes a nasty bastard all the time, kicking people.
Just straight metal plates just stapled onto
I think he's got plenty of future ahead of him, man. I do think he's got more fights. I don't think he needs to hang it up. But, you know, listen, it was interesting, too, that Faber interview with Luke. You know, he kind of alluded to some things that things weren't going real well behind the scenes, that there were some concerns. So I don't know exactly what that was, you know, if it was training issues or all that. But I guess it goes to show you that at least Sage maybe has to understand, look, I'm not superhuman. You know, if I need to pull out of a fight, pull out of a fight.
Yeah.
If I need to, you know what I mean? Like, be a little more sensitive about the matchmaking. Don't just take whoever, whenever, however. Mm-hmm. I do think Sage has got plenty of a future ahead of him. And he does. I mean, he's a marketable guy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he is a marketable guy. And I think there's big fights ahead. I don't criticize one for what they're doing. I think one is doing a great job of getting people to talk about their brand. I mean, they're getting way more attention right now than they ever had. You kind of touched on it too. I mean, some of the viewership numbers that they tease and stuff. I mean, even like when they're even during their broadcast, it's like it's being, you know, televised to 2 billion potential people or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, Well, I mean, the USC probably is too, because all you're doing is like, who can pick up the signal or whatever? Come on, man. You know what I mean? Like, it's a, I mean, I guess it's...
There's 7 billion people on Earth, and technically all of them could see this at some point.
Right? It's like, come on, come on. Yeah. But, I mean, whatever. You want to build yourself up and make you seem as big as you can. That's cool. But I will say the one, the weight-cutting thing, it always bothered me. And it's funny because, like, you know, Alex Davis is a good friend of ours, man. I mean, I love Alex Davis to death. And, you know, the first time he went over there and saw it, he was like, I love this system. It's a phenomenal system. It's great. And he's been, like, lauding, like, oh, I love the way they do this, these hydration tests and all that. And I guess that's cool. I mean, he is, like, sold on it. I'm not sold on it because I don't believe that it's stopping people. And I don't understand why we don't get to see it. Like,
well, this is it. It's transparency.
That's it. Have some media in there. Have some journalists in there. That's what's weird about it. Yeah. You know, I've heard that other camps aren't even allowed to watch the opposing guy weigh in or whatever. Like, what is that about? You know? And it really – it was funny because when they introduced it, I didn't think about it. But then as we started covering one a little bit more because they were growing, you know, I was like, hey, man, can you shoot me a couple pictures of some of your guys? You know, we need artwork for the site or whatever. And they'd send me action shots, which are cool, but sometimes the scale shot's easier because you're like, that dude's back is turned here. You can't see his face or whatever, you know. And it's just like, well, can I get pictures of the weigh-ins? It's like, oh, we don't shoot those. And then I'm like – wait a minute. Wait, there's no pictures of them on the scale at all, you know. And then, and then you start hearing people, you know, the media that have been there, and they're like, they're not even allowed to cover the weigh-ins, like if they want to. That's bizarre.
Which is very bizarre because, especially in recent years, the weigh-ins have become a huge, huge part of fight week. Yep. I mean, for better or worse, like, you could argue about if that's good or not. But in fact, even like the image of a man on the scales flexing his arms.
Yeah.
Is iconic. Like,
it's part of the sport, right?
Arnie and Foreman.
Oh, man. I mean, that Connor picture. Yeah, I mean, that one, that is an iconic shot.
But it's a huge part of it all. It's like part of the spectacle, and they're all about spectacle. So it's like, it's weird.
It's bizarre to me, man. So that's one thing I think they gotta shore up, man, is if they want legitimacy and they want to continue to be. Because I will say, man, like, it seems like every fight. I mean, Eddie Alvarez's opponent didn't look like he was the same size as him, you know?
No,
I mean, Demetrius Johnson's opponent didn't look the same size as him. They've all looked like they've been outsized when they jump in there. It's like nobody gave him the unwritten rules behind the scenes. Yeah. Like, oh, what?
I'm very glad we're not drinking as heavily as last week on this.
I do think that, I mean, I've always kind of been the one of thinking that one is legit bringing these UFC guys over to get smashed because they want to build these guys. And I think, if anything, they should probably run with it because I think you've made a good point. You know, now what do you do with these guys that have killed these UFC guys? You know, I think if they did a good job now to actually take it and really promote those guys, then good on them, because I think that's the first thing that people notice is like, wow, the UFC is supposed to be the end-all be-all, but they went over there and had the toughest matches of their career, and half of them actually just got starched. Yeah. I mean, Sage, who's always kind of been a little bit of a slow starter to kind of get going, his opponent came in there and just wanted to smash his head right from the get-go. So Sage
and
never
– actually did.
And literally did. He had never had a moment to get started, and it just seemed like he was clearly outsized and just out
– I think the ring kind of fucked him a little bit too, to be honest. Like, I don't know if he knew he was going to be in a ring or not, but it seemed
it did.
Like –
it looked like he got trapped.
He got in a corner and was like, oh, shit. And
it's supposed to be round. It's supposed to keep allowing me to slide over.
I can't climb it.
So
what's
true.
This 90-degree angle shit?
Yeah.
You know?
So true.
I'd like to know if he knew that was going to be the case or if he showed up in fight night. Like, it's a ring, baby. Yeah, you know, that's another little thing.
Well, you figured that'd be the kind of thing they'd talk about in fight week or something, you know.
You never know.
But I don't know. I say good on one for, you know, showing that they have incredible caliber guys. Now I would use this time to promote, because I mean, people are talking like, wow, who are these guys that came in and smashed? And I think if anything, they need to do a good job of actually pushing those guys forward. If they don't, then it seems like they're dropping a ball on not promoting these UFC killers. Well, I would actually just start calling them UFC killers.
That's what I was going to say. If you were really smart, someone like Eddie's opponent, I literally can't remember his name and I apologize, but I know it's terrible, unprofessional, but if I was them, I would try and find almost any other UFC outcast the same way and get him to beat them and try and bill him as the UFC killer. I would make that fucking...
Just bring it anyway. Just a guy that it doesn't
matter.
You
fought in UFC? In you go. And I have him beat them, beat like three or four. You could things like the Gracie killer stick around in this sport for like 20 years. Like, that's the sort of stuff that it's not so cheesy you see through it. It's like, oh, yeah, I guess he has, you know, smashed these guys. Why not?
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, like, a lot of people have always said the UFC, number one, number one. I mean, one should just really embrace it and just be like, we're the best three-letter organization out there. We kill every other three-letter organization.
Broadcast to 80 billion people.
80 billion people watch us every day. I don't know. I mean, so as for Sage, I mean, it does say something, the fact that, I mean, he took such a shot and his face was so smashed. It makes you wonder if there was something, maybe. You never know if one of these
needs more milk.
That there might be something. Exactly. There might be something going on that we didn't know about, and then taking a strong, powerful punch. It could be the kind of thing. If that sort of thing pulled out, that maybe he does not have maybe the strongest bone density or something, that maybe that is the kind of thing that you want to change your career and just be pretty and say lines and do whatever. But granted, a super powerful punch put in the right place is going to cause damage. And unfortunately, it caused his face a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean,
it is a freak shot, though. Like, that's never happened. Like, someone's face hasn't exploded in their own skull before, you know.
On one punch.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder, you know, maybe there is something else we don't know. I mean, maybe there is an underlying, maybe there is something health-wise that this sort of thing can happen. But it just could be the matter, too, of just the perfectly placed shot.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
And the guy, I mean,
hey, Cosmo's no joke.
You look at him, I mean, he looks like one giant ball of muscle. And then to just be as amped up as he was going forward and landing at the perfect timing, I mean, I'd love to see him punch one of those punch machines so you could see how much punching power he actually had, because he looked like he was punching like a Mack truck.
Once one
it literally
PI
looked like
it.
What does he hit as hard as a Ford truck?
That was great. That was great. All right, well, listen, the UFC did have an event as well. A rare UFC card that I did not watch live. I was my son's birthday party, so we were
having trains,
fun.
Planes, and automobiles, all kinds of stuff.
We had a good time, man. My kid's seventh birthday, we had a good time. But I sat down and watched him. I just wanted to see if anything stood out to you guys, man. I was gutted for Patrick Cummins. I just want to say, you know, he had been training here at Syndicate, was fighting well, and then just got tagged, man, by a knee that was like, it was crazy because it was like grazing, but it just landed just right. I mean, you could tell he couldn't stand. So that was I was gutted for him. Felicia Spencer, by the way.
Wow.
Pat on the back. Told you guys that was going to happen.
Awesome.
I feel bad for her, man, though, in that, you know, now, I mean, I shouldn't say I feel bad for her, but, you know, it's like she's being linked up to a fight with Cyborg. And that, just to me, is just way too early to make a fight with Cyborg, man. I respect Felicia. I do believe she's a future champion. But, man, just fighting Cyborg's different. And I just feel like that's too early. And then the other one was Michelle Pereira, man. That dude.
Wow.
That dude is must watch, man. I mean,
I will watch him every weekend.
I'm telling you right now, if anybody listening to this right now did not watch that fight, get your ass on Fight Pass or YouTube, wherever you need to go to find it. But Michelle Pereira, his debut, I mean, from crying as he's walking to the cage to literally the most exciting, 2-minute fight that you've ever seen. I mean, he packed so many crazy moves. And we had covered him a little bit on the site before. So, you know, if people didn't know the name, I mean, this is not like it was out of character for him.
I think you'd see – there's a viral video of him, right? If people listening don't know, he's a guy who essentially just jumps off the cage as much as he walks on the canvas.
Yeah, he did like two or three Superman –
Does backflips.
Showtime kick attempts.
Backflips onto his downed opponent. He just does flips. He's you know, like a spinning hurricane fighting you. And so there was a clip that went around earlier this year that went viral, I think, of him.
That's right. I think he was in South Korea, that fight.
Yeah, and it is – you sort of wondered, like, well, now he's in the UFC, will he do that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he will.
That was it, man. I was like, he's not going to be able to fight.
He's big on it. He loves it.
Dude, if he can do that every time out, who cares if he's a champ or anything? Again, a guy I just want – he's fun to watch.
It's funny because commentary is like, oh, he's going to have an energy dump. He's out here crying. He's expending so much energy. And then he got in and was like, wow, I think he's got extra.
Amazing.
I'll tell you what. It was unbelievable.
There are some names in this sport that you think, oh, yeah, he's fun to watch. So if I could see him fight Mike Perry tomorrow, that would be so swell.
Yeah, sign me
or
up.
Emil Meek or someone who's just like, you know, a goer. Just wants to have a glide. Yeah, okay.
Sign me up, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that dude's crazy. Kevin Lee, man, I don't want to not praise RDA because RDA won the fight and it was a big crossroads, a big moment for him.
Yeah.
I feel bad for Kevin Lee, man. I know Kevin gets a bad rap. And part of it, I mean, we talk about it all the time, right? This is an entertainment sport. And a lot of what Kevin does, you know, the persona, so to speak, it's entertainment value. You know what I mean? He gets it. Like, if people hate me, at least they'll tune in to watch, you know. And so he doesn't mind kind of playing that role. Behind the scenes, I think he's a good dude, man. I enjoy talking to him, you know. And again, like I said, I think you – you get to know these guys in a different context when you see them at the gym, when you see, you know what I mean? You see what the work they put in. But I feel bad for Kevin because I feel like there's still talent there, man. I don't look at him and go, yeah, this guy is never going to be good, man. I feel like there's something there, but it's just not all clicking for him.
Yeah, I feel the same. And actually, I think sometimes there are people who do stuff that you go, well, that's just an objectively disgusting thing to do, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on in the show. But, like, if you listen to Kevin...
Because disgusting stuff eventually always comes
out. Yeah, but if you... Kevin's a bit cocky, maybe, but if you listen to what he says, he never says anything that's, like, irrational, unreasonable, really. Right. I always think he's grounded in some form, even if you don't like the tone of it. So, I completely agree. I don't think he's a bad guy. I actually think he's massively underappreciated in the sport, really. Yeah. So I felt bad for him too. The fight itself, it's funny because I remember last week, one of the things I do remember last week, we spoke about how it's a crossroads fight for both of them. There were stakes. And I think watching Kevin lose, you realize like, oh, that was a bad defeat for you.
Yep.
A few things that I took away from the fight was, A, I thought he looked way too sort of tense before it started. I was staring at RDA and I wondered. And then when he fought in the first 3 minutes, it actually, we were just talking about Michelle having an energy jump. I actually thought Kevin had an adrenaline dump. He looked like he looked like he came, I'm going to take him out in the first round. And about 3 minutes in, I thought he looked labored already.
I would agree.
And against RDA, that's not a great place to be. And then I also think with Kevin as well, that probably doesn't help him. He's one of those guys that, and you've seen them before, when they get tired, they get very sort of floppy. You know, his legs look weak underneath him, so he looks very labored. So it's not even like he can sort of coaster around, maybe lose the round a little bit, and you still think he's in there. Like, once he lost his energy, I thought he was, like, very clearly...
Yeah, it's evident.
Gassed from halfway through round one to the eventual end.
Yeah.
So I was honestly quite surprised he lasted as long as he did, because I thought RDA could have turned it up at any moment and really put the pressure on him and got him out there.
Yeah.
Which is eventually what... And also... Kevin's strategy of basically going for the legs and trying to make it into that grinding fight that RDA struggles with, you know, the Covington-Usman model. It seems like Kevin's not got the cardio to do that as much, so it seemed like it was tiring him out, if not
Covington
worse.
Covington-Usman are monsters,
they're freaks,
at that,
you know?
Dude, man.
Yeah, yep. So it seemed like Kevin doesn't have the gas to do that. And looking at where Kevin is now and stuff, I think there's something with his old coach.
Yeah, Robert Fowles.
Yeah, I think, you know, he passed away, and I wonder if Kevin's really found it, the place he needs to be, the groove
That's
he needs
it.
To hit. I really think you can point at that and be like, because he's even said he doesn't know what to do. He trained at the PI for the last one, then sort of trained at Extreme, now he trained at Extreme, and he's stopped social media, he's kept social media. It's like he's trying to find the groove.
I agree. I
think a bit of time away and a new spot could do wonders for him.
Yeah, like, I think
you hit
it
on the head. That's exactly, you know, I mean, as you know, you talk about the floppy, that's like me from round one, minute one. But I think the biggest thing that I took when I was watching this fight was, I think Dewey Cooper is a great striking coach.
Yep.
I don't think he has what needs to be a head coach that what Kevin needs to.
Yep.
I think there were times when Kevin was going to his takedowns and he was expending so much energy that there wasn't proper strategy or proper things being told to him to really get him to work to how to get these takedowns or how to get these things. They were getting shut down.
Yeah.
So when I look at that fight, and I'm not saying that Dewey's not a great coach or can't be a great coach, but I feel what Kevin suffers from now is not having a head coach relationship or a proper head coach that's going to give him what he needs.
Like more of a mentor?
To keep moving forward. I think Robert Fowles was a mentor to him.
I think so too.
Yeah.
And I think what's happening is maybe when you get some of these great head coaches, they're able to help put it all together. Let's make sure your fitness is on good. Let's make sure your cardio is good. Let's have a good strategy and things. And I just don't feel like he's getting what he needs right now to push him in the right direction. Not saying that he's not getting better or whatever, but when it comes to fight night, I just felt like it wasn't there for him.
Yeah,
and I found myself
to see him under like a John Crouch or a Say Saud
I think
Jackson Wink would be amazing.
Jackson
for him.
Wink would be a great place.
As a welterweight there, I think they'd coach him very well. Very well. And I thought you'd going back, I think Dewey Cooper is a very good, especially a boxing coach.
Yeah. I mean, he's an incredible,
I think he's
incredible
very
striker.
Good.
I just don't know if he's ever been like a head coach
MMA,
sort of thing.
Well, also, there was a moment in the corner where he said, you know, this is going to be a war of attrition, but it's kind of like, well, Kevin, you're making it a war of attrition by throwing yourself at his weight. You know, I don't know. Like you said, I think it felt to me that Kevin, since you know, his coach that passed away, is that he's waiting for it to click together, and I think he's kind of a little bit
rudderless right now. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
I agree.
I actually think this fight made that very apparent. You know?
I think he still has
he has all the talent and all the physical ability.
He's still incredible.
I still feel like he's, I don't want to say untapped, because he has shown a lot of incredible talent. I just feel like he's really close to turning that corner in, but somebody has to help guide that corner. Yeah. And right now, I feel he's just not getting it.
I'm just not ready to write him off just yet. I think there's still something.
See, this is the difference, right? So Sage, I'm quite confident in saying, oh, that guy's not a future champion.
Right.
He's actually younger than Kevin Lee. But I think Kevin Lee really does have the talent. I just think, like you just said, it's like when you're learning to drive and you're shit at it, and then one day you're just sort of, oh, I'm doing it. I really think it's waiting for him to just click. And that was a really weird analogy. But it's like he's waiting for it to all click together. And I think a good head coach could get him there. You know?
I agree. All right, let's talk about Oscar. You were on the road earlier this week. You went up.
Let's say one thing before we move on. What about Oliveira and Nick Lentz? I thought that fight was incredible. Third fight, you know, it was like one of those ones, you know, and as I'm watching that fight, I kept thinking, like, you know how, like, Jones had DC's number? Oliveira has Lentz's number now?
And Lentz is tough, man. I like Lentz.
Lentz is super tough, but he's been fighting.
He's a quirky dude.
And he did it a different way than ever now. Like, with TKO, I think that was his first TKO, like, in a professional, or at least with the UFC, and I thought he looked better than ever.
Dude, Oliveira's the guy that's clicking right now. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you talk about, like, he's
future featherweight champion.
Dude, let it go. He's, you know, been in the UFC for like 10 years now. Nine years. That's crazy. And he's still 29. I mean, he came to the UFC so young, and it's definitely all clicking for him. Yeah, man, dude, Ian Heinisch, that dude.
I was going to say, look how big up we built up Shoeface, and then that didn't go
well. Yeah, that didn't go so well. I know, I was 4-0 to start the main card.
Crushed it. Yeah. And I was right that
I was 0-2 to finish, though.
That Sarge, that was a good fight.
Yeah, that
Aspen
Ladd
and Sarge
fight.
Was fight. Awesome
good
fight.
Fight.
Like, if you thought, I mean, Aspen, she's super tough. I actually give her a lot more credit.
I thought she looked a little flat, but she gutted through it.
But I think
that's good. When you can find a way to win on off nights, that to me, like,
that's it.
I honestly value performances like that even more. When you can tell somebody isn't clicking 100%, but they still find a way to win, I like that.
Like Cowboy.
He said, I just had
to get through the first round. And the second round, he's like, oh, there it is.
When you're showing character like that, that tells me something about you. Yeah.
It was good. That was a good night of fights.
It was.
I mean, I just wanted to make sure we set something.
Luque, man, that dude's on a run.
There were so many good fights. I was thoroughly enjoyed watching this last card.
Yeah,
it was. There was a lot of good fights.
It was kind of a struggle for me because so we had my kid's birthday party and my plan was to like stop and like watch the fight, but like it went longer. My kid was playing and like I was like, just be a responsible parent for once, like put MMA to
just
the side.
Be there.
Just be present. So I didn't watch the fights. So what I did was I was scheduled to work the next morning at 5 a.m. So I was the editor on duty. So I was basically like, I had the fights on as I was working. So I was like editing post-fight pieces and watching the fights as they were happening and doing it. So it was kind of a frustrating way to do it.
Yeah,
Working post-fight coverage as it's going on. But it was luckily, it was a very entertaining night of fight. So it made it okay.
I will say as well, it was over at 8 o'clock or something?
Yes.
Just in time to watch Deontay Wilder attempt to kill Dominic Brazil. It was, it was so perfect. Like, it was over. It was so funny because I was like, I'm not going to go out drinking tonight. And then it finished so early, I was like, well, now I've just got so much time. I had to. What else am I going to do?
Oh, that's great. All right, well, let's talk about earlier this week, whether Deontay Wilder, what that guy was massive.
It's ridiculous.
But, you made your way up to New York, for the BKFC press conference. And it's interesting because, look, sometimes I don't know if we should be covering this or not. I mean, we cover MMA, but when it has Artem Lobov involved in it, like, I'm down, like, you know, just to cover jiu-jitsu for the sake of jiu-jitsu, but when you have the crossover appeal of notable MMA fighters. So, and I think BKFC is smart in doing this, of course. I mean, look, the numbers are doing great on our website when we, the Malignaggi stuff. But
something about Artem gets the clicks of the Mac Life as well. I can't think about
funny why. How that works out. I am a huge.
Why is that?
We've said it before, man. I'm a huge Artem Lobov fan, man. I really like the
choo-choo
guy.
Choo-choo, motherfucker.
He is so entertaining. He always comes with at least one line prepared. He had hope the magic man doesn't disappear or whatever. That was good. But I don't know. Give me a sense of what this is like because watching on the street, I will say it is bizarrely intriguing, man. Like Malignaggi is incredibly annoying, but to the point that you like you just want to see him get punched in the face.
Yeah.
And so it's funny. Like I hate kind of encouraging Malignaggi or encouraging this behavior, but it is bizarrely intriguing. And listen, I really do want to see Lobov beat the crap out of him. I really, really do.
Well, this is the funny thing, right? When you've been in this game and you've covered this sport, you sort of see these people like, oh, they're doing the Floyd thing. Make everyone hate me. You'll tune in. And it's really quite rare for me to think like, to almost fall for it. It's really rare for me to be like, I can't wait to see you get punched.
Yes.
I really just don't care usually. But with Paulie, I'm like, you must just shut the this is so annoying. And
I feel the same way. And I shouldn't care. I'm just covered a sport.
But he keeps attacking our bubble.
Well, this is the funniest
shit. It's like, you can't just talk shit about your opponent. Now you got to talk about MMA like we're all trying to shit on you.
This is
don't fucking care about you, Paulie, but now that you're like talking shit about us,
I can't believe I've got a platform to rant about this fucking guy. Right, so this is the funny thing, right? So one thing that people listening probably won't know is actually, surprisingly, it's mostly boxing media there. It's very I was the only MMA media who traveled there, obviously because we're covering Artem. You guys had like some of there, Amanda, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had MMA Fighting had some there, but not names that I guess people would be quick to recognize. So it was mostly, the MMA media was outnumbered probably about 30-3. And so it's a very boxing orientated sort of day and stuff like, because they're all about Paulie. And you know, if you don't know, boxing media are just generally scum. That's not true. They're just very fucking annoying.
You know, it's true, boxing guys.
They just don't play by the same rules as us. So it's
kind
of hard. But so when Paulie was on stage and just started like freaking out at MMA media, I was like, well, hey, it's basically just me here. So I felt like personally he was talking to me. Yeah. And secondly, he was like, I don't know why you fucks put Lobov before Malignaggi. You put Lobov versus Malignaggi. And I went, oh, yeah, I do that. And guess what now, Paulie? I know it annoys you. I'm going to fucking do it every time.
Every single time.
So that's just by the by. But yeah, Paulie's shtick, as it were. And also, I don't know how much shtick it is. Like, because, yes, they're selling a fight. 100% they're selling a fight. They'll sell a fight and then he fucking spits on him.
Yeah.
It's like, there's levels to it. And I spoke to a boxing guy afterwards who's been around for years, and he was like, look, I've covered Paulie like his whole career. I've never seen him like that. He's like,
really?
And if you watch the stream, it sounds ridiculous that it would affect a grown man who's nearly 40 years old this much. But literally, like, you see him before Connor's name is brought up and after the spar is brought up, and the fucking guy loses his shit.
It bugs
like, he
him.
Literally
it bugs
just,
him bad.
Someone asked him about the spar and he just started and he couldn't stop and he just freaks out. The fuck, and maybe most of that's probably more to do with, I can't imagine his Twitter mentions every day for the last 2 years. Yeah. I've been like, Connor. But
well, plus,
so
I think Artem was poking the bear as well. Like, if he didn't chat back while Paulie was doing his speech, I don't know if we ever would have got it to that point. But
that's true.
I think once it got to the point where Artem's like, or when Paulie's like, dude, you had a chance to talk and now you want to talk shit? All right, fine, let's talk shit.
Well,
you know?
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, now, ever since that point, that day, for that presser, he was on a whole different level. He was in a different gear. At that point, he was fired up. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine that spit. Like, I watched that. And
that was too much, man. I know that sounds stupid, but to me, that's too much.
It's worse when you play it in, like, slow motion. You go frame by frame because you're like, was that a fucking loogie? Like, how did he build that up? Like,
do you know how he built it up? Because he was chewing his fucking gum like a madman preparing to do it.
That's what it was.
For about 30 seconds before. Go
Felt
back
like
and watch
he was
it. He's literally chewing his gum.
Trying to build
gum.
It up. Yeah. He knew what he was going to do.
And that's the thing.
And he tried to hit him with the mic. Like,
he did hit him with the mic, right? That's too much,
mic.
You just touched him.
But
that's too much, right?
He was losing his damn mind.
You hit him
there.
With the mic, cut his fucking head open, but fights off. Well done, dickhead. Like,
exactly.
You know, but also, yeah, like the spinning thing, it sounds silly because we've seen so much worse shit.
We're talking about a dude getting his face smashed in 40 pieces or whatever. Now, like, but don't spit on him.
But it's weird. They're like, oh, he's talking shit about our boxing. He's talking this. Oh, let's stand up and do it. Here, let me spit.
But also, that's
what you want to put out there for yourself, carrying the boxing
this
label.
This is a fucking analyst for Showtime. This is fucking. He's like actually got a like professional career and shit. Like fucking behave yourself a little bit. We don't need you to be an angel. But secondly, he was like, don't point your finger in my face. Oh, I'm pointing his finger in his face. He's like, I'm going to show you if you do that again. He taught him a fucking lesson there, didn't
you? Yeah,
David Feldman's face.
Oh, that is funny. He ended up hitting the promoter instead of Arthur. That was pretty funny.
So gross. I was like, Feldman's face smells like Paulie's lunch.
I think what made this worse, too, was, I mean, the set, it was going to Dave and Buster's, right? I mean,
yeah.
Okay, no,
is that
okay,
what it was? A Dave
no,
and Buster's?
I mean, no disrespect. Hey, I like Dave and Buster's. No disrespect.
I love Dave and Buster's.
Bellator have had a few things there. Bellator's.
I'm sure it was a corporate, you know, sponsorship thing. So that's great. I'm not saying the place, but just it didn't seem like they had the technical setup right. And
right.
They definitely. I mean, if you got Pauly going off, isn't half the value of that like the back and forth, and you don't have Artem with a microphone?
Precisely.
Like that was poor planning.
And I think Artem actually, I think it's pretty obvious that that was like an oh shit moment, because when Artem went up to do his, you know, that stupid boxing speech they have to do with
right.
the
fucking, opening comments.
Well, you know, your mum's cousin comes up and gives 20 minutes, but like
right.
Artem said, let's keep it short and brief, because I think he wanted that back and forth.
Yeah.
So when Pauly got up and made himself real fucking comfortable, Artem felt like, I'm not getting a back and forth here, so that's why he started to interject. And then it became like, it's like fighting the DJ. You can't argue with the guy who's got the microphone. Like, it's real tough. So I think Artem kind of got hard done by that. Also, I just realized, thinking, they had a microphone in the crowd for the media. They could have probably brought that up onto the stage.
Yeah, well, somebody should have done that.
Just thought about that. Should have done that. So that was the big thing for me. I think they wanted a back and forth, and it was kind of hard to get. And Paulie's, like, quite loud as well. He probably didn't need the microphone, maybe. But, yeah, I think Bare Knuckle FC is a very interesting sort of promotion right now. I think they're making waves way beyond what they thought they would be doing at this point.
I agree,
number
man.
Six, and they're getting like crazy traction.
Dude, I'm telling you, the numbers when we put stuff up from the last show, this show, oh man.
And I think perhaps there's growing pains. I think perhaps, you know, like I would struggle to believe they thought when they started this, in six events' time, we'll have brought Pauly Malignaggi out of retirement to fight Conor McGregor's high-profile
so
sparring,
true.
Mate, you know?
I mean, not in their wildest dreams.
I mean,
can you imagine if they were sitting in a meeting, like, having a strategy meeting, but like, listen, I bet
Pauly.
About 6 months
yeah,
in. What, you know?
Yeah, like, so I mean, commend them for that.
Yeah,
they've managed to get it done. I mean, yeah, I think it's very impressive what they've done, but I think so does growing pains. But I also think when we're used to high production value from the UFC and Bellator and stuff like that, it is like, that seems like a no-brainer to us. You know, two mics seems like a no-brainer to us. And also, I think for the audience they're going for, which I think is predominantly MMA audience, I think they're getting more MMA people than boxing people watching, like Artem versus Jason Knight. That is pure MMA stuff.
Yeah, I would think so too.
So that's why I'm like, well, why are you doing this in the style of a boxing presser, like if you're doing an MMA audience, right?
Yep.
So that's something to think. But I think it's growing pains. And look, I defy anyone to say they're not at least mildly interested.
That's my point, I guess, is that, like, yeah, dude, I'm into this. Now, I will say, last time out with Artem and Jason, that was the weekend that there was, like, no MMA. You know what I mean? So I think that was why so much of the world was focused on it. I think come fight week, they're going to have a harder time this week because it's the same day as Bellator London and Moicano and Korean Zombie. Now, I will say, we're not sending anybody to Moicano and Korean Zombie. We will have our England resources at the London event. So, I mean, it's not that we won't have the manpower to do it, but I don't know. I just wonder if they're going to get as much traction on fight week. But, I'm interested. I mean, I'm interested.
Listen, this is pure, like, randomness. But you know what would, like, how they get a tweet of Conor McGregor driving towards an airport on the day of. I think their fucking
man.
Buyers would fly
they
through the
would love
roof.
That. Does Artem have a chance in this, man? I mean, I feel like it's a different. I mean, if it was a straight up boxing match, obviously no.
Well, of course. This is. I've had a lot of time to think about this. I got to be with Artem in New York for a bit and interviewed him and stuff, and we spoke about it. The ring is very small. Like, it's like, I think a boxing ring's like 20 by 20.
Right.
This is probably half that.
Really?
It's a circle. It's very, very small. They don't start from opposite ends. They start face to face, toe to toe.
Right.
And to be honest, because of how small the ring is, I just sort of think, if you're talking like boxing, like they're going to trade jabs, yeah, Pauly Malignaggi wins that fight.
Yeah.
But if you go back and watch Jason Knight versus Artem Lobov, and essentially the tactic was, I'll go forward, you go forward, and let's just swing from the hip and see what happens. If he can get that, who the fuck knows
what's
going to happen?
That's what I think. It could be a little surprising. I mean, listen, I was not one of those guys, no disrespect to your boss, going into Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather that thought Conor was going to win. I mean, I appreciated the spectacle of it, and, yeah. and I mean, I thought it was bizarre that we were putting it together, and I got it, man. It was fun, but I was like, dude, I know what I'm gonna see here. Right. I'm 99% sure. Yeah. Of course, anything
but
can happen.
Mystic Mac told us he was gonna win.
But here, I don't feel like I know what I'm gonna see. Maybe that's one reason I'm more intrigued by it. Like, if this was just them getting ready for a boxing match, I don't think I would care because, I know what's gonna. I know what I'm gonna see, so I don't care how much trash you talk. But maybe that's part of the reason I'm so intrigued too, because I feel like. Yeah, like Artem might be able to make it a little bit chaotic and might be able to shock.
He's gonna land punches. I mean, let's be real. This is a boxer fighting a guy that's not a boxer, but has some level of boxing in his arsenal. Paulie's probably gonna piece him up, and he's, as long as he keeps the movement, it's about the. I think half the times when you watch great boxing, it's this great footwork and the way that it's able to set up the movement, and it's just it's amazing
it's
when you see
it
done
on a different level
really
than MMA
level.
Is. Yeah, it's incredible
but
to watch.
Artem is at some point, I'm pretty confident, is going to land some punches, and if he has the right punch that can stag him for a second, hopefully he's gonna get a good couple shots. And for me personally, watching it. That'll be enough for me. I just want
to
see some good shots that just rock Paulie's head back a few times. And if it comes down and Paulie pieces him up for the rest of it, whatever. I'm not expecting Artem to get some wonderful victory. Of course, there's always the puncher's chance. Paulie could go in there not giving the effort. You know, the thing about Floyd always prepares. Floyd, even if you don't see him really going in there, Floyd will practice.
He's a
Floyd will prepare for shit. I don't know if Paulie's going to give it the same effort. Paulie might be so confident in his own skill that he maybe won't be training as hard as what, say, like Floyd did for that. And I'm still just going to be happy if Artem makes a decent showing and just makes him fucking eat his lip a few times.
There's a couple of other X factors here as well. When I went to go watch Artem versus Jason, I think it's fair to say that bare knuckle fights in Tampa or Biloxi attract a certain type of clientele buying tickets that night.
Yeah,
they're great fun. But I think the last time Paulie boxed, it was, you know, elite level boxing at a big stadium, ESPN. I can't help but imagine he walks out on that ramp and goes, "What the fuck? Where am I?"
Yeah, right.
I can't. And then he's in the ropes is blood, you know, covered with blood. He gets through, and he's like the ring's tight. Yeah. I can't imagine that would be a bit like weird. And
not going to have like some beautiful dressing room
or ring girls. Yeah. No, actually, that's not true.
Or gloves.
Actually, that's not true. Bare knuckle have lovely ring girls. But secondly, I think every fighter I spoke to at the last bare knuckle who was fighting for the second or third time, they all said the same thing. You go in the first fight and you think, fuck it, it'll be fine. And the second fight, you go, that was not fine. That fucking sucked. My hands are in agony. So, and Paulie has this reputation of not being a big puncher and of having quite brittle hands.
Right.
Secondly, if you give Artem 10 seconds, he'll be fine to carry on fighting. So even if you drop him, he'll get up and
that
keep
going. That is true.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
Paulie could bust his hands the first time.
Well, that's what I mean. I really think and the only person, it sounds like I'm lying or bigging it up, the only person I spoke to who didn't say, oh yeah, the second fight, I'm going to fight differently, was fucking Artem. He was like, oh, you know, I'm going to swing him and see what fucking happens. Like, he told me he was like, in the first round of his fight with Jason Knight, he was convinced his fucking, every bone in his hands was shattered. They weren't, they weren't broken at all.
They were just so badly bruised.
He was just convinced they were shattered. And he was like, well, fuck it, you're in there, you got to swing anyway. So that's the sort of,
what are they?
A big difference to this one. I mean, Paulie, I mean, he's used to using his gloves. He's able to control his pressure and how hard he's hitting.
Yeah.
And
he's going to want to get in there and
they're allowed to clinch as well. They don't separate the clinch. They're allowed to work from the clinch. Paulie's never had a fucking MMA guy just get the underhook and just over
start wailing.
Dude, the Daniel Cormier. Like, I'm not saying.
So now you're selling it.
Of course I am.
Now,
boys. Let's
now,
fucking go. Let's
now all of a sudden, I'm leaving Team Artem, you know, but I.
Do
you're
they
right.
Do odds
I mean,
on these fights?
You know, I mean,
I think Artem was the favorite the other day.
Really? Against
Paulie? Yeah, I wouldn't go that. I wouldn't necessarily say he's a favorite, but I will say, like, Artem, I did an interview with him after the spitting incident, and I said, I get the impression you're fighting for.
Saying there's a can behind you. If you could I was just trying to not say it. I was just trying to just.
Sorry, guys. So having a beer technical issue. But yeah, so Artem said to me, like, I said, do you think you're fighting for MMA? He went, no, I'm not fighting for MMA. He's like, I'm fighting for just good people. It's like, Paulie's just a scumbag. His parents hate him. I was like, okay. So I just think if it is all selling the fight and stuff, like, Paulie's done a very good job of making most people think, like, oh, I'd love to see you just get a fucking dick.
Right?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Clear up for me real quick, because you were on top of this.
Yeah.
What are they wearing? Because there was some – I saw some reports going back and forth, because at the other events, it's literally just hand wraps, right?
It's hand wraps around the wrist going up to below the knuckles, essentially. So basically, your wrist is secure and straightforward. There was some confusion. I saw some reports where in the Florida Commission's law, it says that people kickboxing or boxing must wear a glove.
Okay.
I think what's happened here is the word glove is being taken at sort of face value, and actually glove means some sort of thing covering some sort of part of the hand.
Right.
Yeah. I spoke to the commission member. He said, no, they're wearing the same wrist straps as they were last time. You know, it's covering a bit of the palm. There's a bit of leather in it or something. That's a glove. And then I confirmed with David Feldman, the promoter. I said, what glove are they wearing? And he said, this is the glove. And it's just the hand, right? It's just the wrist strap. I was like, that's quite the fearsome glove there.
That's
so
interesting.
There's all these reports.
So it's still going to be the same bare knuckle we're expecting to see.
What they had Jason Knight and Artemin, they're having Paulie and Artemin. So.
Yeah, which for the most part, when you're looking at it, the front of the knuckle is completely open, but it's on the backside of the wrist, all the small little bones
from an inch down from your knuckle, that's where the thing ends.
And that's the main stuff that you really need to protect, too, a lot with your hands. Like, when you're taping your hands, part of you're going over the hands is to protect those bones.
It is essentially to try and, like, let's hardcore these hands up so they don't bend and you break your wrist or something. It's just to have, like, two little truncheons on your arms. It's rough on them, by the way.
I bet.
It's rough fights.
I might be drinking the Kool-Aid here, man, but I'm thinking I'm leaving.
Dude,
can
you imagine? Team Tutu, man, he's been there, he's done it. And
we
would
live in a world where Artem Lobov beat a world champion boxer.
I know, that sounds stupid when you say it like that.
But come on, boys, believe.
Right, but when you look at it, though, it's like this. Even though this is boxing, this is not a typical boxing match.
Another thing as well I noticed from the last fight, I noticed it really badly as well. Because of the size of the ring, because of, like, this sounds fucking gross, but because of how slippy they get from the blood, because they when Jason and Artem fought, I climbed in through the ropes and my entire suit was covered in red. Oh. Like, there's blood everywhere. Because of that, they actually slip on the cat. They fall a lot over, like, because they're so high energy, they sort of fly past each other and almost fall over. So it's really, like, it's meant to be
so gross when you think about, like, I was going into the strike, but I slipped on all the blood
on the canvas. It's boxing in the sense they're standing up, but it is actually, I really believe if you go back, it's almost like its own sport. It's not MMA striking. It's not boxing striking. It is bare knuckle boxing striking.
Agree.
It's little things. And like you were saying, Kenny, like when you watch boxers box, the thing I notice most is like, wow, these motherfuckers can move.
Yep.
Their feet are incredible. They move laterally way better than MMA guys do. The range is different because of the kicks, obviously. But I don't think that transfers over as well as to bare knuckle. I think bare knuckle is just like a fucking blender.
It is.
You sort of see what comes out.
It's brutal. Are you going to be there for it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Madness. Who else is on the card? Is this the one?
Chris Lieben versus Brennan Ward.
Yep.
Oh, he's fighting early. This is against Brennan Ward.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that should be good. I mean, Chris Lieben's like, it's so funny. I think Brennan said, I really think I'm going to do
Reggie Barnett, Johnny Bedford.
Chris Lieben was like, oh, yeah, I was kind of like, born for this, so. And actually, I think Artem had a great line as well, where he's like, I was made for this. Paulie was not. I don't know. It's tough, man.
I'm leaning towards Artem. I can't believe I'm saying this. Man. I don't know if I'm just totally crazy.
I will
Choo-choo, motherfucker. Hop on the train.
I will say this. Jesus, I drank more beer than I thought. I will say this.
But these ones are... okay.
I will say this about Artem. I think for a long time, Artem's been linked to Conor and sort of considered this like a bit of a punchline almost.
Right.
I think that fight with Jason Knight changed a lot of opinions on him because, say what, even Paulie had to be like, look, the guy's got heart,
Right. Yeah.
You can't eat. And that was one thing I thought as well. Is Paulie just setting this? Because Paulie gave him the compliment. And it's like for a moment when he cut the fucking fedora wearing bullshit, he fucking sounded like a normal person who was analysing the fight and he seemed a bit smart. And I was like, I'd like to talk to that Paulie. To talk to him about the differences in MMA striking. I'd like to talk to that guy. But you can't talk to that guy because he's a fucking idiot.
He just goes into shtick mode immediately.
Do you fucking eating pizza from New York? Crossing the Brooklyn Bridge into the Bronx and Queens. But
be tuned in the UFC that night, but I think I'll have a second screen on that one, man. I gotta watch it. All right, listen, not a lot of MMA this weekend, but there is some MMA, and I'm going to recommend everybody watch it. Saturday night, UFC Fight Pass, CFFC 75, Granger versus Azevedo. That will be me making my debut for CFFC. Myself, CM Punk, and Jessica Penne will be on the call, so I'm looking forward
to what I'm looking forward to. I'm more the CM Punk than anything. I'm not going
to
lie.
You're looking forward to CM Punk? He's good. He does a good job. Listen, I will say this, though. I've obviously started doing my research and getting notes together and everything like that. I leave tomorrow morning for the weigh-ins. As always, we're sitting down on Thursday afternoon, and so I leave Friday morning. The inaugural strawweight title is on the line. Miranda Granger, listen, Miranda Granger is the real deal. It's an inaugural strawweight title there. She's facing Eloisa Azevedo, who's a tough Brazilian. But Miranda Granger, I think, is going to be in the UFC sooner rather than later. So if you want to see some future UFC potential, 5-0 as a professional so far with 5 finishes. I believe all 5 in the first round. 10-0 as an amateur as well. So 15-0 total. And I think she's – I really honestly – and watching some of her tape and then also just talking to her, I think she's incredible. There's also – I think it's going to be a fun fight. It's the whole fight card, there's one lightweight fight, and everything else is featherweight or below. So, you know
– speedy.
You get high-octane fight. So anyway, I think it's going to be good. But anyway, listen, I did get a chance to speak to Miranda Granger, and I figured, you know what? Since I'm on the call, let's introduce her to the world a little bit, introduce her to the Roadshow faithful. So here's what Miranda Granger had to say. Listen to her talk, because I think you might end up being as sold on this girl as I am.
Hi, John. This is Miranda Granger.
Hey, Miranda. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you calling. This still work out as a good time for you?
Yes, great time.
Fantastic. Well, let's get into it then. I mean, 5-0 to start your career, 5 finishes as well. I mean, pretty impressive stuff. Give me your feeling of, I guess, how proud you are, how happy you are of what you've accomplished already in your career.
Yeah, I'm really happy with where I'm at in my career. You know, I give all the credit to my coach, Charles Pearson, and my team, Charlie's Combat Club. I definitely would not be where I'm at without, you know, the people that I train with and, you know, the coaching that I've received. And I've been with Charlie since I was 4 years old. So just having that bond with your coach, I mean, I have my full trust in him, and I'm proud of myself, but I'm also not done yet. So,
yeah, no question about it. Charlie's Combat Club, not the most well-known fight team in the nation right now, right? Tell us about that gym. How'd you hook up with them and give us an idea of what that place is like?
They might not be well known now, but I guarantee you, in a couple years here, they're gonna definitely be known. We have some really good fighters out of that gym. But I got with Charlie's Combat Club. Well, I started, like I said, with Charlie when I was about 4 years old. At that time, it was called Pearson's Black Belt Academy, and it was more of a Taekwondo gym. So I did Taekwondo with Charlie, and then I actually got my black belt in Taekwondo when I was about 12. Huh. Went on to play, you know, middle school, high school, college sports. After that, started getting, you know, out of shape because I went through college and just wanted to get back into shape. So that's, you know, I went back to what was now Charlie's Combat Club, and I started doing kickboxing classes just to stay in shape. And then I was like, oh, I'm actually pretty good at this. So took my first fight about a year later, and I went 10-0 as an amateur. And now 5-0 as a pro, so I guess it's working out for me.
Yeah, no doubt. That's phenomenal. I mean, you know, I guess growing up, you know, training Taekwondo your whole life, I mean, did you ever consider the possibility of professional fighting at all in your life?
Yeah, so, you know, I was probably like 10 or 12 when my dad took me to my first, like, real fight that girls were fighting. It was at actually one of Charlie's, you know, gym shows that he put on, or not gym shows, but shows that he put on.
Right.
Just an amateur event. And I saw girls kickboxing, and I remember just thinking, like, oh, I could do that. You know what I mean? At 10 years, I was a pretty competitive, spunky little kid. So I just remember that feeling. And, you know, I always thought that my life might move in that direction. I didn't know how much it would take off. But it's funny, like, if you go back to any of my, like, even elementary school projects, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Every single one says professional athlete. You know, it has like a list of 10 things that just said professional athlete.
Right.
So, I mean, it's what I've always wanted to be. I didn't know that it was going to be with fighting. I just had that, you know, goal of getting myself to that, like, top caliber level since I was a little kid.
No question. You know, I guess if somebody just knew about your training background, they'd probably assume that you got a bunch of, you know, knockout finishes, but it's submissions. You've got a ton of those as well. So, I mean, where did your grappling game develop? Are you a ranked belt? How did that come about? I mean, because it seems like, you know, you're getting things done with your grappling as well.
My grappling game started at a very young age when I used to just wrestle with my dad. Yeah, my dad literally, like, every morning, every weekend we'd start the day, we'd like start wrestling. But it was I just remember stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I don't do like gi, so I'm not like a ranked belt. I'm not like a, don't do gi jiu-jitsu or anything, but I do practice a lot of groundwork and you know, study a lot of things. But you know, I kind of just when I'm in the cage, just rely on my training and rely on, you know, just muscle memory. I feel like I almost like black out when I get in there and my body just, you know, my mind like takes over and my body just does what it tells it to do. So I'm just always looking to finish and I'm always looking to cause the most pain possible. So I look for those moments, and when I see them, I try to capitalize on them.
I like that. Maybe it's sad too. I was going to ask, I mean, 15-0, as you said, when you add in the amateurs, I mean, no secret to you, I'm sure a lot of people have their eye on you and believe that, you know, you have what it takes to compete at the next level. But what do you think is the key to your success so far? I mean, no matter who you're fighting, to get that many wins in a row, it's impressive. So, I mean, is it that mindset? Is it something technique-wise? Is something within you? I mean, if you had to point to something as the big key to your success, what do you think it would be?
I think I fought girls who are tougher than me. I think I've fought girls who are technically better than me, but I don't think I have fought anyone with as much heart as me. Mm. And I think my determination and just will and want to win takes over. And I think that is stronger than, you know, most girls out there. And I think there's a few girls in, you know, that top level that I've seen that in, but I just think that is lacking a lot. Not just in female MMA, just in MMA in general. Just, I feel like people are going out there and they're fighting and they're doing what they need to do. But for me, it's not just fighting. Like, I am so competitive and I just want to win. And a lot of my fights have been finished in the first round. And like I said, I look for that finish, and once I smell blood, I feel like it's over. I can just feel them break a little bit. And once I see that, then I know I've already won.
Your track record shows it. Let's talk about this opportunity. I mean, headlining CSS E75. I mean, the inaugural belt is on the line. It's a main event. I mean, it's on Fight Pass. It feels like, yep, a big moment. I mean, does this feel like a big moment for you?
Yeah, every fight is a big moment. This obviously is the biggest so far. So it will be my second professional belt that I'm fighting for. But obviously there's a lot more on the line with this one. And the opponent that I'm facing she's really tough. So I'm excited. I'm not like nervous or fearful. I feel like I need to get, as weird as it sounds, like I'm addicted to fighting. So it's like, I need to get in there and just get that hit of fighting again. And I'm just excited. I'm really, really excited. And the pressure, I like pressure. So the more pressure that I feel like, the better that I do.
I dig it. You mentioned your opponent there, Eloisa. I'll be honest, I haven't seen much of her. I mean, do you know much about her? Were you able to find much tape? Did you scout her? Do you worry about that? What can you tell us about her?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a couple things. Like you said, there's really not much out there on her. From what I've seen, she's super aggressive. So, but you know, I'm ready for that. And I've been saying for, I don't know, 4 years that I want to fight. Like, I want someone that's going to bring the fight to me. And I think that she's the opponent that's going to do it. And I really want to show more of myself and more of my skills. And, you know, the only way to do that is to fight someone at the same caliber or better caliber than what you are. So I think that she could be that opponent for me.
I know that, you know, there's no guarantees, but I mean, do you feel like an impressive victory gets here, a UFC call? I mean, 6-0, especially in the women's divisions. I mean, there's women in the UFC right now that don't even have 6 fights, right? So, I mean, do you feel, yeah, like, I mean, do you feel like a win here and a call to the UFC is a possibility?
I definitely feel like it's a possibility. But like I said, I'm taking one fight at a time, and if it doesn't happen, I'm not going to be disappointed in myself. If it never happens, I'm not going to be disappointed in myself. I'm living out my dream and what I love to do every single day. So obviously that's where I would love to be there. I mean, that's the top place, you know? So I think it's a possibility, but you know, right now my sights are just set on this fight.
Yeah, very cool. Well, I think for a lot of people, it'll probably be their first chance to see you. So, I mean, if somebody hasn't seen you fight, give us an idea. I mean, what can they expect from a Miranda Granger fight?
They can just expect some exciting, hopefully quick work in the cage. And I don't know. I'm a finisher, so I expect a finisher.
All right, so that was Miranda Granger. Listen, man, something about the way she talks, the confidence, you know, not cockiness, just the self-belief, and I'm telling you, the highlight reel is there. I'm anxious to call this this main event at CFFC, so that will be on Fight Pass on Saturday night. Check it out, me and CM Punk and Jessica Penny. I'm actually really, really looking forward to it. Listen, another event on Fight Pass that is happening next week is WXC 78 Warrior Wednesday 3. You say, well, why are you telling me about this card, John? Are you calling that one too? Well, no, I'm not. It's up in Michigan. I should be, though. Everybody should employ me to just go call fights, man. But listen, there's an interesting situation here. Justin James was in the main event. Justin is actually fights out of Extreme Couture, and he actually teaches my son's wrestling classes over there at Extreme Couture. So I've come to know the guy really well. He was crowned the WXC lightweight champion in his last fight. And then the very next week, Austin Tweedy, who was on the Contender Series, he won a fight, and they gave him a lightweight belt, which was bizarre. So now you have two lightweight champions, but Justin kind of gets into that. Anyway, it was supposed to be a unification fight. Instead, Justin's going to be fighting James Warfield, who's been around for a minute, has like 36 professional fights. But anyway, this will be before we get together again next Thursday. So even though it's next Wednesday, this is, again, WXC starting to host once a month fights on Wednesday nights. So you've got live content on Fight Pass. But wanted to give my man Justin James a little opportunity. He's 14-4 in his career, 9-1 in his last 10, fights out of Extreme Couture. You know, he's hoping for a shot at the big time, man, and this will be a moment for him to potentially get some more eyeballs as he's fighting on UFC Fight Pass. So here is Justin James. All right, man, let's get into it. I mean, you're fighting at WXC next week. I gotta ask, are you the champion in this division or not, man? I saw you get a belt, and then I'm watching them a few weeks later. They're wrapping a belt around Austin Tweedy's waist. Give us the scoop. Are you a champ or not?
I tell you this, man, Austin Tweedy, this has been like a circus these last couple months. You know, me and Brandon Noble fought for the WXC title, you know, in February. And then, yeah, like you're saying, a month later, they're crowning a new guy now. The way they're trying to play it out is, since they're doing this Warrior Wednesday deal with the UFC Fight Pass, that Tweedy was going to be the Warrior Wednesday champion for the WXC. And then, you know, me or Noble were going to be the regular champion, and then we're going to unify them. I think it was just kind of like a gimmick, yeah. Just for views. But you know, who's Austin Tweedy, man? He isn't anybody anymore. I'm hoping that WXC just strips some of this shit. I've already put in two fight camps to fight that cat, and I'm not signing another contract with his name. It's a waste of time. You know, it's like I said, it's shit. Two full fight camps, and he backs out. 3 weeks the first time, then 2 weeks the second time. I just don't have time for that shit. So,
yeah. Did they? I mean, what happened this time? Did they give you any news, or did they basically call you and say, "Sorry, it's not happening"? Did they tell you what happened?
Yeah, they both times he says he pulled his abdominal muscle. Nothing more specific than that. And you know, I've been around the sport as you have for a long time. You know, you get injured in fight camp. That's just the way it is. I mean, you can never go into a fight 100%. Last year when I went to India, I broke my foot in December, and I ended up fighting in February in India. It's just, you know, fight camps don't always go perfect. I understand he wants to be 110%, but it's just, you know, my fight camp isn't perfect. You know, I've had days where, you know, I get hurt or pull muscle. It's just something you got to get through. You just can't, oh, I pulled my abdomen muscle. Because, you know, I know he has a regular job and shit, but, you know, these are paydays for me that I'm missing out on because, you know, he pulled his abdominal muscle twice, two fight camps in a row. And what are you doing to pull your abdominal muscle twice, you know, twice like this in a row? I just don't have time for Austin Tweedy anymore.
Yeah, that's not an injury you hear very often either. All right, well, you got James Warfield. They found you another opponent, so that's good. You get to stay on the card. Give me an idea. I mean, what do you know about him? Did you research before you said yes? I mean, was there any hesitation? Talk about the replacement stepping in.
There wasn't really much hesitation. You know, I'm in shape. I'm in the best shape I've been in. You know, James Wortfield is a tough guy. He's been around forever, from my understanding. He has almost 40 pro fights. He's 23 or 24 and 13. He's a bigger, a very experienced opponent, you know. So I actually talked to James right after the booking, and he told me that, you know, he trains all year round. He's in shape, and he's going to be bringing it here next Wednesday. So, like I said, I'm the best I've felt weight-wise, cardio-wise, technique-wise. You know, like I said, I've been putting in, you know, this is back-to-back-to-back fight camps. So I'll be ready to go no matter who they put in front of me. So, yeah, me and James Wortfield are doing catch weight at 165, you know, for the WXC next week. So we got dropped down to co-main, which is fine. I don't really care about that stuff. But, yeah, James is tough. I know he's going to come swinging him, and you know, hopefully I just have to keep my chin down and get through another guy.
Yeah, no doubt. How'd you guys end up talking? Did you just reach out to him when he stepped in or something?
Yeah, basically over social media. You know, I got the announcement that he was going to step in on the 2-week notice fight, and I just, you know, tagged him on a post on Facebook. Just want to say that I thank him for stepping in, you know, because, like I said, two fights in a row for Tweety to back out on. I mean, you know, that's two paydays in a row, you know, that, you know, I need to get paid. So it's nice that James, I appreciate him stepping in, you know, so him and I can both go in there, put on a show, and both get paid. So that's that.
Yeah. Talk about it. You know, you said this is the kind of the new deal on Fight Pass. I mean, is this adding to it for you a little bit? I mean, does it feel like a bigger fight? I mean, I feel like when fights are, I mean, at least they're live, people can see them live, and I got to think, you know, UFC pays attention to the promotions that are on Fight Pass. I mean, does it feel like a big moment?
You know, I've been doing this for 12 years. This is going to be almost my 70th fight. You know, it's just another day in the office for me, man. I fought for Bellator, you know, when I was on MTV or when I was on Spike TV a couple years ago. It's just another day in the office. And, you know, I'm just going to show up, no added pressure. Like I said, just like any other job, I'd show up, I'd do what I'm supposed to do and get the hell out of there and, you know, just handle business. That's it.
70th fight, man. I didn't know you had that many. Where were these all? Was it amateur? Are you talking boxing? I mean, how do you get to 70?
Yeah, for MMA, you know, when I wrestled at Olivet College over in Michigan, you know, when I was, me and Darren Cruikshank were roommates, and yeah, Michigan, before it was regulated, like, you could fight every week. So we fought pretty often. And as an amateur, you know, I had 47 amateur fights. And
good Lord.
It's going to be my 18th pro fight here. So, you know, it's like I said, it's just another day in the office for me. There's no added pressure. I'm going to show up, do what I do best, and that's it.
Give me an idea what you feel like. I mean, I know that everybody's trying to get into the UFC, right? Everybody wants that big-time opportunity. And you're in pro practice every day, I mean, with a huge team at Extreme Couture. I mean, you're right alongside these guys that are in the UFC. I mean, what's that like for you? I got to think in some ways it's positive because you know you're going with them, but I got to think it's a little frustrating maybe too because you're thinking, you know, why are they in a spot that I want? What's that like for you?
You know, I've been training Extreme Couture since, like, 2009. You know, so, you know, when I first got there, it was, you know, Tyson Griffin, Martin Campman, Evan Dunham, you know, Jay Haran, Mike Pyle. So I've been around these guys for a long time. Most of them have me at some point a part of their camp. There's a reason they're having me a part of their camp. So, you know, you know, I'm happy for my friends, like, say, Boston Selman, when he gets his call to the UFC, you know, earlier last year. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, sometimes it's frustrating. It's not that I'm jealous or anything. It's just like, man, what am I doing wrong? You know, but then again, I look at the weight class that I'm fighting at lightweight. It's the most stacked weight class I believe there is, or at least numbers wise. You know, it's the average weight of somebody, and I think it's the toughest weight class. And, I do understand that. And that's, you know, kind of why I put on my resume, be jumping around in weight classes just to kind of show that, hey, look, I'm here to fight at 145, 155, 170. You know, wherever you guys ever fall out or drop out, you know, I'll jump in on short notice and, you know, I'll try to bring a fight. But yeah, it can be demoralizing sometimes, you know, and, you know, you're at the gym with all these guys and, you know, especially if you're putting on some of them, and, you know, they're getting fights at the big show and you're not, but, you know, you just got to stay positive and, you know, keep it the grind. This is going to, you know, June of 2019 will be my 12th year competing. And, you know, it's when I know how to do best and, you know, I'm just going to keep my head on the grindstone and come up, put it on James Wortfield and, you know, hopefully get an opportunity after this or maybe one or two more and, you know, see what happens. That's all you can do, man. It's just, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, I talked to Sean Shelby a couple times, and verbatim what he's told me every single time is just keep doing what you're doing. So I'll just do that.
Yeah, makes sense, man. What's I got to ask you, what's preparation like? I mean, this close to fight, because, I mean, you basically go straight from pro practice into teaching a bunch of kids how to grapple, you know what I mean? Is that tough for you? Because, I mean, it's literally like an almost instant transition out from you, you know, putting your body through a hellacious practice to then, you know, then you got to lead these young men and women and try to teach them something. And I imagine they test your patience and you're probably physically exhausted. What's that like for you?
Yeah, you know, the fight camps are tough, especially, jumping right out of a training, you know, especially like a Tuesday, Thursday practice, right? I jump right in and start, you know, coaching kids. That it's very tough. It's, I mean, every day, I mean, I love my job. Don't get me wrong. I love teaching the kids, even on the bad days. But, yeah, there are days where it's like, man, just, I even tell them during class sometimes, you know, it's like, hey, look, kids, I don't have any patience today. Let's just get through our stuff. Let's get through our drill. You know, keep me happy. I'll keep you happy kind of deal. But, yeah, I love coaching the kids. But, yes, it definitely, especially at this point in fight camp where, you know, I'm focused on my weight loss and my diet. And, you know, I just got to survive this next week and, you know, get through. But, yeah, dude, it's going to be a grind to say the least.
I bet, man. Well, I listen, I know, like you said, you know, Sean Shelby's told you to just keep doing what you're doing. But what do you think? I mean, listen, a win here, I mean, you're talking about 9-1 in the last 10. That's solid. I mean, your last three were all first-round stoppages. I mean, I know that's what people like to see. So, I mean, in the back of your head, are you hoping this is the one, or do you let yourself think that way?
I mean, I'm always hoping it's the one, you know, it just comes to the stoppages, man. It's like out of my 14 wins, you know, I have 12 stoppages, you know, 10 are in the first round. I mean, 6 knockouts, 6 submissions. It's like, I'm not a one trick pony, you know, it's like, I just keep finding places to win, you know, the losses that I have, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's always been some bad decisions, like taking a fight on short notice. Like when I fought Tommy Aaron a couple of years ago, you know, when I remember when the promoter called me, like, hey, we got to fight for you. Like 2 weeks or 3 weeks, will you fight Tommy Aaron? And I was up in Northern Nevada hunting mule deer, drinking beer, and you know, hadn't fought in a couple months. And I was like, oh sure, I'll jump in. And you know, Tommy was he put in a full fight camp. You know, the reason they called me, I later found out, is you know, his opponent got injured, and they're looking for a replacement. And you know, I show up and I lose a decision to his hometown guy, and it was a good fight. I'm not saying that I thought I won. But it was a lot. I mean, I didn't think I lost, if that makes any sense. Like it was weird. And there's no chance I lose that fight putting in a full fight camp. So that's one thing that, you know, I've decided to do after that was, you know, I'm not taking any more short notice fights unless it's for the UFC or, you know, Bellator or something like that. But you know, I hope this is the one, man. Like I said, I'm going to go in there, do what I do best. I'll find a way to finish James Warfield. And then, you know, it'll put me at 15-4 with 13 finishes. I mean, I don't know what else much to do besides just keep doing that, man. Find the submissions, find the punch, or find the strikes, and, you know, finish these fights.
All right, that was Justin James fighting next Wednesday. You can catch that on UFC Fight Pass as well. WXC 78 Warrior Wednesday 3. Man, dude, we have been home for so long. The MMA Roadshow has been emanating from the Costa de Cold Coffee.
MMA Home Show.
I was going to say, we got one more week at home. And then you and I will actually be heading out to UFC 238 Cold Coffee. We'll be out there to cover Chicago. Kind of getting used to staying at home a little bit. I know you're gonna do Chicago as well. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. I will say next week, if anybody's in Vegas, FFC 37, Final Fight Championship 37, will be at the Rio on Thursday night. So I'll be calling those fights, myself and Frank Mir.
You
commentating
might
get, is getting going might, again, yeah. Man.
You might get a word in on that one.
We really enjoyed the first show I did with Frank Mir. So the deal with FFC is right now everything is tape delayed to CBS Sports. And unfortunately, they don't have an exact broadcast time. Like, I guess CBS just kind of slots them around like where they have availabilities. So if you're looking for MMA on CBS Sports, they have some. But I think they're working on trying to get more of a live component somehow. So they're working on this. It's a new promotion. I mean, this is FFC 37, but it kind of got reinvented. They had like 30 shows in Europe, and then they came to Vegas. Now they're at this cool facility. It's called the Fight Dome over at Rio. It's like a really small like television studio, but it looks awesome. But it's cool because it's fixed cost. You know, everything's like there and mounted and it doesn't have to be moved around. So that's cool. They're doing big things. And I had a good time with Frank Mir. They do like boxing and kickboxing and MMA all on the same card. So you get a little change up, you know, it keeps it kind of interesting. So that'll be going on Thursday night. Last thing I want to say, I guess, is give a shout out to our good buddy Shamat Karsandu. Mm-hmm. He announced that he's going to work for PFL. We don't talk about PFL a lot on this show, just because we've always taped on Thursdays and their events, a lot of them are on Thursdays, and so it's like, well, we can't really preview the card because by the time most people listen, it's already happened, and obviously we don't know the results. So we don't talk about PFL a lot, but I like their product, man. I really do. I have more fun with the standings and stuff I've said before than I thought I would. Like, I think it's cool that you fight, you get points. There's no like, what do we do? It's cool. So I know Sandu has wanted to work full-time in the MMA space for a long time, and he finally got that. So I wanted to give him a shout-out. And I guess I'll just throw it out there. I mean, it's an interesting time for MMA media, right? Indeed. I mean, there's a lot of movement going on. I don't even know really how much I can say about our own team. But I will say there are some changes coming to MMA Junkie, and I imagine they'll be announced very, very soon. So, I mean, there are some changes. I'm sure everybody, you know, listening has probably seen the announcements. Sean Alshadi announced it, that he's left MMA Fighting. Obviously Sandu announced that he was leaving MMA media as a whole, but then the next day announced because he was going
into
promotional.
It's funny as well. I wanted to tweet and be like, you can't have 2 days worth of congratulations. You only get one at a time.
Well played. You can see he knows his social media. Yeah, he got two days worth out of it.
How to do it. I was like, you motherfucking cheeky.
listen, announcements forthcoming. It's a wild time. I mean, between the number of people that left to go over to ESPN. You know, obviously Mark Raimondi went over there to join Brett and Ariel. And
let's just cut the tension. We should probably tell them that we're not going anywhere.
We're not going anywhere.
We're not going anywhere.
We bleed Junkie Blue, dog. Come on, man. We ain't going
nowhere. Settle down, everyone. Everyone was getting all worried.
It's because you can't drink on the job anywhere else.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the only place that understands what I'm doing.
The place that enables us.
I will say, you know, I need to share it out, but I was talking the other day about PFL to Greg Savage, who works for PFL now. And he sent me a funny picture. I need to put it out on my social media, but I'll show you guys now. But this is my Sherdog business card that I never got because years and years ago, I was going to go to Sherdog, and we were kind of talking about the changing landscape. Savage was like, you know, I still have your business cards, right? He's like, I had a whole box. He's like, I threw them away. He's like, but I saved a couple. I was like, no, you didn't. I was like, so he sent me a picture. So it's my Sherdog business card.
Do you know what's the worst thing in the world is I actually had business cards made for me at the Mac Life, and then I realized no one fucking uses business cards anymore.
Sure they do.
No, they fucking don't.
Everyone's just like,
what's your Instagram, bro? Like, that's the difference.
That is true.
See, I get asked every once in a while.
Do you really?
Yeah. And especially if you go to other countries.
Is that those special parties where you put them all in the bowl?
You're like, who am I going to end up with tonight? Or like, you go to some place, you go to, say, Japan. Like, it's very cultural.
Oh, yeah. I'm regularly making trips to Tokyo.
MacLife is sending you all over the place.
They, like, present you with their business card with, like, both hands.
It's like a very formal sort of thing. It's very respectful. And you're looked at a certain way if you don't have a business card.
Well, wait until the producer chewed up piece of shit I've got in my bag from three months ago. Like, here you go, mate.
But say you want to do an interview with somebody. Like, I found where, say, if I meet somebody, a fan or somebody that's there, and I'm like, they have an interesting story, I'll give them a business card, and I give them one of my USA Today cards, and they're meeting, like, well, shit, okay. You know, they'll remember that. So if you have a business card, it is a nice way where you don't force somebody to pull out your phone and have to put your digits in.
I'll start carrying them with me instead of just leaving them in the big box.
I mean, especially if you already have them made,
I have some. I'm bad about carrying them. I do get
it was like an adult
now
thing.
Then,
that
like,
was one thing for I felt like once you reach the threat, I was like, wow, I'm an adult now. I have business cards. I made it, you know.
Wow. Yeah, I've got I may be failing in every other aspect of my life,
but I have business cards.
I'm barely making minimum wage,
but I have business cards.
I'm drinking myself to sleep every night.
But I got business cards.
I got business cards.
I use them as beer mats.
Phenomenal. Somehow this responsible episode is getting less responsible as we go on.
Sponsored by Vistaprints.
Oh, that's great. All right, well, listen, like I said, tune in to CFFC on Saturday night. If you got nothing going on, chime in. Let me know how me and CM Punk and Jessica Payne do. I'm actually looking forward to that. And thanks to you guys for hanging out on another afternoon.
Yes.
Casa de
Cold
Coffee.
You guys are more than welcome to always be here at the – Casa de Coffee, whether it be cold or hot outside.
One more week of us being at the Casa de Coffee, and then you can we'll finally get this damn road show back out on the road.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. All right, everybody else, thanks for listening. Yeah.